chapter, Every Day is a Good Day. In this chapter in our book, Suzuki Roshi starts by referencing the story of Zen Master Unman. Sorry, I have a little thing in my throat. Suzuki Roshi says, "One day Master Unman said to his students, 'I don't ask about the 15 days before. How about the 15 days ahead?' As Suzuki explains, that was his question. 'I don't ask you what happened 15 days ago or what has been happening for the last 15 days. I am asking you what will happen starting now.' Since no one could answer that question, Unman said, 'Every day is a good day.' Every day is a good day means that every day of his actual life includes both there is and there is not, and he is satisfied with the idea of there is and there is not. There is something as good, and there is nothing is also good. Every day is a good day." At home, Richard and I have a beautiful, long, vertical scroll made by Shoto Harada Roshi. And on the scroll, in thick, inky calligraphy, is this phrase written in Japanese: "Every day is a good day." The words hang over the stairs that lead from our flat down to the street below. And "every day is a good day" greets us every time we enter or leave our house. It seems so simple and clear, almost too sweet, like it could be on a greeting card or a pharmaceutical ad for painkillers. But the meaning of Unman's story is not about getting rid of the bad and embracing the good. The meaning is not about good and bad at all. In fact, it is pointing to something beyond dichotomies, beyond our judgment about this is good and that is bad. So in this chapter, Suzuki Roshi is helping us to understand the true meaning of "every day is a good day" by offering a new perspective. He references a poem by Ryokan when he says, "There's a Zen poem that goes something like this: when the wind stops, flowers fall. When a bird sings, the mountain becomes more calm." And Suzuki Roshi comments, "This poem refers to the feeling of there is and there is not. When you see a flower fall, you feel the presence of the wind even more than you do when the wind is blowing. When a bird sings, you feel the calmness of the mountain even more than you did when you did not hear any sound. That is our actual feeling. That's our feeling of there is and there is not. But usually we are involved in superficial ideas about there is and there is not." Maybe you've noticed what Suzuki Roshi is talking about this week as we've sat here, listening to the crash of one wave after another and the brief hush and lull between waves that makes the next sound possible. Or the way the silence of the zendo intensifies the sound of someone clearing their throat, and a sudden cough can highlight the deep silence that follows it. Absence and presence, presence and absence. Not one or the other, but one intimately linked to the other. Suzuki Roshi says this in his chapter: "When you see many stars, you feel the vast emptiness of the sky. You are not watching stars. You are not just watching stars. You are feeling the vastness of the sky." I love this quote, and it makes me think of a project that's happening right now in Point Reyes. The seashore and the town of Point Reyes Station are trying to earn an international dark sky certification. And this would help ensure that the region stays dark enough so that the full spectrum of stars and planets are visible at night. There's only about 200 places in the world that have this certification. I volunteered on some initial data collection for this, and to me, it's another form of habitat restoration, restoring the darkness, restoring the vastness. We and so many other creatures need darkness to make us whole. We need darkness so that we can really see the light. And it's not just starlight for humans to see. Darkness matters for migrating birds as well. As many of you know, we're at the tail end of the spring migration season right now in California. In fact, while we all slept last night, 142,600 birds passed over Santa Cruz County on their way north. I wasn't out there counting them. I know this because, like some birders in the room, I regularly check the BirdCast website. I was given special dispensation as Shuso to get on the web today. Several years ago, scientists recognized that weather satellites were not just picking up the movements of clouds and wind, but also the movement of migrating birds, lots of birds. About 80% of migrating birds migrate at night. And like us, they are affected by light pollution. Excuse me. Birds need the darkness to migrate. We need the darkness to see stars. As Suzuki Roshi tells us, when we look at the sky, we are not just watching stars. We are feeling the vastness of the sky, a vastness that contains more than we know. As an artist, these words make sense to me. You can't create a composition without learning to appreciate foreground and background at the same time. And although I don't think those words, foreground and background, are exactly what Suzuki Roshi is describing here, he is pointing us to a simultaneity of stars and vastness. There is and there is not. One of the many revelatory things about learning to draw is learning to see. And this means not focusing just on an object, but learning how to appreciate the space around an object. Only when one understands there are no hard edges, only relationships between things, can you really begin to appreciate the power and beauty of drawing. No hard edges, only relationships. Sounds a little bit like Dharma practice. On a workshop one time in Italy, we were given ink and brushes and asked to make a copy of a famous painting by the 13th century Chinese artist Muchi. He had painted a black bird on a white sheet of rice paper. We all set to the task of copying the form, focused on our brush strokes, but almost no one took time to notice the size and shape of the paper on which the bird was painted. We all thought the bird was the important thing, but it was the white space around the figure that made the whole composition work. I'm telling you this because in order for every day to be a good day, we need a different orientation, a different perspective on how things fit together, how things really are in the world. Even though the calligraphy of every day is a good day has hung above our entry stairwell for years, sometimes I don't really see it. I'm so focused on my intention to get on with the day and make and my ideas of what I want to do rather than how I want to be. To break this habit, our practice requires shifting perspective and lots of repetition. One of the many benefits of art is that it can help us to reorient ourselves. Art pulls us in with something we think we know, language or color or line, and at the same time opens up new possibilities, new ways of seeing and thinking. I think of Norman's poems this way, and also all the wonderful work that other artists in this sangha make. But art can also reinforce certain habits of mind. In the West, we're so accustomed to linear perspective that we hardly question it. It's a useful tool that was refined during the Renaissance, but we can't quite seem to put it down. Of course I am here, and the horizon is over there. Of course here and there are distinct and distant from each other. But if you've ever let your eyes wander through the mountains of a Chinese landscape scroll, or marveled at the overall pattern of medieval tapestries, or the simultaneity of views in a cubist painting, you know there is more than one way of experiencing space and time. A simple walk through the woods defies the laws of linear perspective. Nature doesn't draw straight lines. It relies on patterns and cycles. And yet linear perspective continues to snare us in its trap. Its central axes emanate from a fixed viewpoint, the self, and with a well-defined horizon line and a vanishing point. You might substitute the words aspiration for horizon line and fear of death for vanishing point. The point is, everything is pushed away from where we are now. And when you make a composition where everything is pushed away, then you have to fill the middle ground with something. With linear perspective, I can chart a path through the middle distance using orthogonals and goals. I have a plan that will get me from here to there. These cultural constructs reinforce a binary way of thinking. How can every day be a good day if there is a separation between where I am now and where I think I need to be? Here and there are not just spatial separations. They are mental and spiritual separations as well. Here I am as a small child learning about the inevitability of death, and there is the future. My parents' deaths, the deaths of everyone I know, and my death. And the middle distance, or to be honest, the whole rest of the picture, is full of anxiety. An anxiety that comes from pushing here away from there, separating there is from there is not. But Suzuki Roshi is asking us to hold both of these realities at the same time. Right here, to see the stars and the dark vastness that holds them. I received a text from my brother before we left for Sashin, and after some back and forth about how best to care for my parents, the consensus was there are good days and bad days. And that's true in one sense. Sometimes there is pain and discomfort, and sometimes there is not so much pain and discomfort. But even with these ups and downs, from the point of view of our Zen practice, every day is a good day. As Norman said this morning, it's amazing that we are even here and alive. My linear perspective, my separation of here and there, implies that the distant horizon is the place to be. When I use this kind of delusional thinking with my parents or a health diagnosis or my own discomfort, I start believing that there is some kind of plateau in the distance where things will stabilize. If I can just get there, then things will settle down and I will enjoy the good stuff. But Suzuki Roshi is telling us that fundamentally there is no good and no bad, no here and there. And because of that, every day is a good day. He tells us in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, treat every moment as if it is your last. It is not preparation for something else. My experience of being Shuso has been a bit like this. At first, I had my linear perspective mind on the job. If I can just get through this Dharma talk, then I'll be a little closer to the horizon of ease and freedom. But instead, this experience is teaching me to simply show up for what is happening now. To acknowledge what is right here in front of us is enough. Because over time, we learn to appreciate the tremendous space around the thing in front of us. When you see many stars, you feel the vast emptiness of the sky. You are not watching stars, you are feeling the vastness of the sky. Darkness and light play roles in Zen practice and in artistic practice. When I was first learning how to draw and paint, one instructor would always say, everything has a dark side and a light side. It's an important first step in translating a three-dimensional object onto a two-dimensional surface. but not a totally accurate way of moving through the world. And even in art, this dark side, light side dichotomy is not really true. For example, the deeper you look at the light side of something, the more you see highlights and lowlights and mid-ranges. And the closer you look at shadows, the more you see form shadows and cast shadows and even reflected light inside those shadows. Light and dark have a way of interpenetrating each other. This makes me think of the Sandokai as we chant, "In the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark there is light, but don't see it as light. Light and dark oppose one another like the front and back foot in walking." These two forces are not the same, but they do rely on each other. They complete each other, just as death makes life possible, and life makes death possible. They are both part of an integrated whole. And still, it's a habit to push illness and death away. And that's why we practice, to remember we are living and dying all the time. And we can relax in that. This process of death and birth is not some distant, frightening horizon. The great matter is happening around us, all the time, right now, in this room. As I've sat here this week, slowing down and opening up with all of you, I felt my mother here too. At first, she was coming and going as an abstract thought. But then as things quieted down, I began to feel the sense of her in my own body, in my whole being. This is part of what Suzuki Roshi is trying to help us understand, I think. Becoming ourselves is quieting who we think we are and allowing the whole world to enter us. As Kyogen Carlson writes, to make a good life, you have to make a good death. By that I mean a daily life of letting go, of dying to self over and over. Our expectations die, hopes and dreams die. Moment by moment, what we have passes away. When we are in harmony with that, we are learning how to die over and over. And that's what we've been doing here at Sesshin, keeping the silence and dying into self over and over again, watching the inhalation come and die into the exhalation, and the exhalation go and die into the inhalation, allowing thoughts about who we think we are to arise and pass away. I like that the title of Suzuki Roshi's book is Becoming Yourself. It is not Be Yourself, which might suggest we've already got it figured out. We just have to do it. Instead, we are becoming ourselves. We have stepped into a process of birth and death, form and emptiness, emptiness and form. And as Suzuki Roshi says, when we can really appreciate the feeling of this process of becoming, we can harmonize with it. When I received Jukai about 12 years ago, one of the names Norman gave me was Inconceivable Shadow Image. And I've twisted myself into logic pretzels over the years, attempting to discern exactly what this means. Shadow image? Does that mean my light side needs some balancing? Do I have more shadow work to do? Is there another aspect of ignorance and delusion that I haven't fully owned? Probably. But, of course, there was also Dogen's lovely poem, Contemplating the Clear Moon, Reflecting a mind empty as the open sky. Drawn by its beauty, I lose myself in the shadows it casts. I understand a little better that my name is Inconceivable Shadow Image, not just Shadow Image. The inconceivable shadow image is not death, but the deep appreciation of death and its profound connection to light and life. Not there is and there is not, not light or shadow, but the inconceivable notion that both are present. The inconceivable notion that because we can appreciate birth and death right here, right now, every day is a good day. And I'd like to leave you with a quote from Suzuki Roshi as we head out under the fog and the stars and the birds tonight. Wherever you are one with the clouds and one with the sun and the stars you see. You are one with everything. That is more true than I can say and more true than you can hear. Thank you. Beings are